talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back to another Sunday night edition. How y'all doing? I missed you all from last week. Well, you know, I went to my first Miami Heat game over this weekend. It was off the chains. LeBron, y'all know how they play. We had such an amazing time. I got to tell the truth. We were like six rows to the court. I don't want the courtside seat. I don't want to get hit in the face with, you know, a basketball. But it was amazing. So shout out to the Heat. Y'all took it home. What's up, Miami? You know how much I love this place. You know, I'm here now, living here in Miami. We in Miami. How you doing, Mary Bowman? Knowing my business. Anyway, everyone, we've got an interesting show for you tonight. We've got the most amazing 14-year-old that you ever heard, all right? He is known, as Lil Wayne calls him, the Black Justin Bieber, but we're going to call him by his first name, Torrione. So he's going to be with us here in just a minute. And then we've got Cold Case, a murder story. Check this out. We've got an unbelievable... I heard this story from Rolanda Watts. Her name is Dani Parker, and she wrote an article on Huffington Post about her mom being murdered about 19 years ago. And it's still a cold case. No one knows what's going on. We've got Mark Anthony coming back. You know, Never Letting Go, we had him on before, talking to the other side. So we've got some amazing stuff here on Max and Friends tonight. But before we get to that, I want you to hear why I am just so enthralled by Torrione. Now, some entertainers need not wait for adulthood for the spark of light to manifest. Unable to be contained by mere years, their gifts sprout early, and in doing so, it shines all the brighter. At only 14 years of age, musical prodigy and Young Money Entertainment artist Torrione Sellers ensures his place in this canon with a voice that is, in a word, timeless. Here's what Lil Wayne has to say about my next guest, Torrione, and we're going to go right into a song called Ghostin', because tonight on Max and Friends, we got that spirit in the house. Hit it, Ronan. Torrione, when we're back.
Today, I want to reveal something new. I want to reveal something needed. I want to reveal something now. I want to reveal something then. I want to reveal the future. Not only the future of Young Money, Cash Money, but the future.
Super fly. I'm uber fly. You say you swaggin'? You a lie. I'm swagged up.
Yeah.
life.
Yeah. I'm ghosting, I'm ghosting, ghost. I'm ghosting, I'm ghosting, ghost. I'm ghosting, I'm ghosting, ghost. I'm ghosting, I'm ghosting, ghost.
Swagger out if it's mine. Basquiat and his crime. Gotta be fresh if it's mine. Ratings is inclined. And this kind of insane, cause with my fresh I resurrect. But you can catch me rocking all white like I'm coming from the dead. Get at me. Really though, a beast is...
This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was Torrion. That was the song Ghostin'. Now, everyone, I want you to welcome my musical prodigy, my 14-year-old in the industry tearing it up, what Lil Wayne calls the Black Justin Bieber. Torrion, welcome to Max and Friends.
Yo, what's up, L.A.?
How you doing, Torrion?
Oh, man, I'm great, yo.
I thank you for being here. You know, we've got a lot of people hitting us up on Twitter. We got to say hi to Lil Bree 14. And we also have sarcastic type. We're going to start with a fan question. She wants to know, are you single and would you date a fan?
Oh, I'm single. I would. Let me know where you at.
So we could hit you up on, everyone, go to Twitter. Torrion is there. You could follow him at Torrion Sellers, S-E-L-L-E-R-S. Go find him there. But speaking of, you've got an amazing website. Now, follow Torrion.com. How did you get into this industry at 14 years old and you're tearing it up?
Oh, man. Man, it all happened with my manager, David McPherson, man. It all happened at church, man. You believe that?
Absolutely. A lot of great things happen in church, right? So now, when did you start singing?
Oh, I started singing when I was 9 years old. Yeah.
Did you think this was like the thing for you? This is what you wanted to do?
Yes. I mean, I've wanted this ever since I was little. I've been practicing, wanted for this moment, man.
And now you're working in the studio now between LA and Miami. You're like traveling all over the world. You're doing homeschool and you're getting ready to take this world by storm, aren't you?
Oh, yes, sir. All day. Yes, sir.
Now, who are your inspirations in the music industry?
Oh, man, I got to say Lil Wayne. You know, it's that Young Money All Day. Chris Brown. A lot of them. Chris Brown, Ryan Leslie, John Legend. It's a lot of them out there, man. Trey Songz. Yeah, you know where I'm coming from.
I feel you. So now listen, you've got like millions of hits on the internet. People are following you. People are loving you. What do you want your fans to know about you?
Oh, man, I want them to know I'm that humble guy. I'm the guy that's caring for them. I'm going to talk to y'all, the fans. I'm loving y'all. I'm tweeting y'all. Make sure y'all know that. And I'm going to bring out some more hits for them. Knowing that it's coming back, if I fall back, I'm coming right back up. So you know where it's coming from, y'all.
Speaking of your hits, you're working out in the studio. When do you plan on releasing your next album?
Oof, man, that'll be probably coming out maybe 3 or 4 or 5 months. It most likely will be in this year. Most likely will be in this year, though.
So yeah, how was it when you first...
working on it now, though.
That's groovy. So how was it when you first met Lil Wayne?
It's crazy because I was like all hyped up. I was like super excited. My dad was like, all right, so I'm going to calm down. I was like, okay, I got to calm down. You know, I got to be smooth. You know, how I got to be. And so my dad was like, all right, man, be cool. Smooth it out. So I was like, all right, cool. But
now,
man,
can
I was
people,
super excited.
I could imagine. So people want to know, we've got people Twittering right now, where they can get your music from.
Excuse me, what'd you say?
They want to know where they can get your music from.
Oh, you can get it from followtorian.com, YouTube, Torian Music, you can YouTube that. But the website, followtorian, as you were saying, the music and the mixtape will be played on there where you can listen to my music in. So all
now, tell
my
us-
Facebook, Torian Music, you can follow me there, add me as a friend there. I will add back to all the fans, so make sure y'all do that.
They love that, right? Now, tell us about this song, How to Love, with Krista Clear.
Oh, yeah, Krista Clear. Man, she's a great person. I really like this song. You know, it's a cool song. I really like it. But, yeah, she's a cool person. Very nice song. Bowlegged Lou set that up with us. Shout out to now, Bowlegged Lou, Paul Anthony.
Do you write your own music?
I'm getting there. I'm working on it, but I mostly have a writer for me. Her name is Ink and Casey. They produce for me, so.
They're doing a great job. So how does it feel to all of a sudden be 14 years old, you're thrown into the limelight? Can you handle it?
I mean, you have to have a schedule. You have to have everything planned out. You have to know what you got to do, this and that. You have to be organized, you know?
So you're born for this, right?
I mean, yeah, God put it in me, so I got to be born for it. You know what it is.
That's the truth. Now, 14 years old, I know you've got a lifetime to live. But at this young age, what do you feel you want your legacy to be in this world? What do you want people to remember you most by?
You know, I want people to remember me by, like, I want them to say, man, you remember that young kid? Well, not that young kid, because I want to do this forever. I want to be, like, forever in this. So I want them to say, like, man, you remember that young kid, that humble little kid? He always stayed humble. He always was in his music. He always stayed strong, working hard, always stayed focused. I want them to say, like, man, he was a good artist. He stayed out there. He stayed strong. You know, that kind of person, integrity.
Torian, you've got integrity. You've got grace. You've got style. You're cool, my brother. So check this out. We're going to have you back on Max and Friends when you drop that album. How does that sound?
Oh, yeah.
Most we want you back.
Dog.
We want you back for sure.
Let me do a shout out right quick. I want to give a shout out to my boy Tone in LA. Hey, man, that's the one we've been working with. That's the dude right there. He's a beast. Yeah, y'all got to check him out. Tony.
Give a shout out to all your fans on Twitter because they're tweeting right now.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to all my fans. Fans, there's a lot of y'all. Let me see. Torian Hollicks, Team Torian, all of y'all. Shakira, Livery. I know y'all see me out there. Yeah, everybody out there. It's a lot of them, so I got to name
all right, yeah. Give them a shout-out. So listen, Torian, we're going to have you back just in a couple months because this time is going to fly. So remember, what God has for you, it is for you. Stay focused, be inspired, and take this record industry by storm because I'm feeling it. We love your music here on Max and Friends. Before you bounce, let everybody know that this is Torian. You listen to Max and Friends.
Oh, okay. It's your boy Torian, and you know where it's coming from. It's your boy Torian all day. Let go.
Hey. All right, my brother. Well, have fun. We're going to play How to Love right now featuring Crystal Clear, and in a few months, we're going to have you back. So stay focused and be inspired, my friend.
All right, man. Thank you so much for coming out
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. All right. Be blessed, brother. Have a good night.
All right. You too. Peace.
How to Love on Max and Friends. And when we're back, everyone, we've got Rolanda Watts, Danielle Parker, and Mark Anthony. The book Never Letting Go, the story of cold case murder. And Rolanda Watts is going to tell us more about it on Max and Friends. Stay tuned.
Love.
LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Hey, Ronan, what's everyone listening to? I've got my special guest, one of my dearest friends. Y'all know who she is, Rolanda Watts. Welcome, Rolanda Watts.
Hello, Max Tucci. It's a joy to be back on your show.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. You know, we've got this connection, Ro. And I've got to tell you, I saw the Huffington Post article that Danielle Parker wrote about her mom being murdered. So tell us about the story. Let's do a flashback to 1994.
Well, you know, once again, there you go with the beauty of Facebook, just how quickly information can pass, which was very different when I first met Danielle Parker, who wrote this article in Huffington Post. She talks about it's almost been 20 years since her mother was murdered, and still there is no further information than almost 20 years ago. And part of the question that she's asking in Huffington Post is many things. How long can you live with people telling you to just get over it? How does a family deal with the fact that there is no closure? But is there, as some recent news has come out, or at least some speculation, let's say, is there a cover-up? Was her mother murdered because of a robbery when she was bludgeoned over the head and left in a desert outside of Arizona? Was it a robbery, or was there much more? This has been devastating. I first met Danielle Parker, and she's my peer. And I was covering the O.J. Simpson trial back when I was doing the Rolanda show. And if many of you recall, we had O.J. Fridays, and we were very much ahead. We were the first talk show to come out of hiatus, in fact, covering the O.J. Simpson trial. We were the only talk show to have a seat in the courtroom. So I spent a lot of time in what we called, you know, the O.J.ville, you know, O.J. Camp O.J., with the rest of the reporters and anchor people from all over, journalists from all over the world. One day, we had covered so many angles of the story, Mac, that one day I was out there and I was with my camera crew and we were doing, I mean, it was like guerrilla warfare out there and everybody was trying to get an angle and trying to get some answers. And I was standing out there with my crew and I said, I've got to get another angle on the story. I've got to figure out another way to tell the story so that it's just not another murder story. And there was this beautiful young woman, blonde hair, looks like the girl next door, somebody you'd see in ballet class, you know? And she's standing out there, and she says, you want to tell a story? Tell this. And she's wearing this T-shirt, Max. The T-shirt, it basically says, you know, murder is not entertainment. And I can tell you that. And you know, she had such haunting little eyes, and she had so much to say. And I said, well, what is your story? What is your position? And she started telling me this story about how her mother was murdered. And went on to talk about just how many cold cases there are out there. And this
there
is
are
not a
so
story
many.
Necessarily.
No, it's, because, yeah, you know, I got to tell you, Ro, just this week, there were two cold cases, one 23 years later and the other 17 years later, that were solved. So there's so many cold case murders that are being solved. There's so many in general that are still out there. And the worst part is that there's no closure. There's no hope for people. But, you know, with technology, with eyes, I always believe truth crushed to the ground shall rise again. And I always believed that there were a pair of eyes that saw what's going on. And some people, it just takes courage to open your mouth to say, I saw something. You know,
That's
we've got
right.
now all over the airport. If you see something, say something. That's
Mac,
right.
I love what you're saying because things like Facebook and Twitter and even shows like yours, we can still keep the word out. Somebody knows something in 20 years.
Absolutely.
Somebody has to know something. And if you do, by the way, you can call 88Crime. Go to www.88crime.org. If in the midst of our conversation you say, wait a minute, I know something about that, you know,
I can hear.
Like you said, speak out.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? We've got Danny here. So why don't we invite Danny on? Let's get the story. Let's go back to that day 19 years ago when Danny's mother was brutally murdered, and we're going to find out. And I know that there's people out there listening. I know that someone out there knows what's up, and I know that it takes courage to open your mouth. So, people, I pray that tonight you find the courage to, if you saw something 19 years ago in Tucson, Arizona, that tonight's the night that you're going to get some closure into Danny Parker's life. Welcome to Max and Friends, Danny Parker.
Michael, grab me. Hey, Danny.
Danny's here. She's just getting her mic together, getting everything ready, because she's about to tell you all the story that's touching.
Well, you know, the Huffington Post, Max. You know, a lot of if you read the Huffington Post, you guys, you might have seen Danny's article recently where she just talked about it. I think it was Super Tuesday, and she was saying, this is, it's not such a Super Tuesday for me because here we are on another anniversary and still an unsolved murder.
Right. So, Danny, you with us now?
Yes, I'm with you.
We're glad that you're
here. Thank you for having me on, Max. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Much.
And it's Rolanda Watts that really sparked the plug and said, hey, everyone on Facebook, I want you all to see this story. So,
Danny is not only a friend and not only has a great story to tell and somebody I've told her story and will continue telling it, but she's also a veteran print, radio, and television journalist herself. And Danny, you can tell your own story. You've covered so many crime stories yourself, but to cover and to have to live through your own story is a whole nother thing.
In a million years, Rolanda, first of all, I never thought that I would be on the other side of a crime story. I had been working since I was 19 at a local NBC affiliate in Tucson, Arizona, where I went to college, and I had seen some horrific crime cases, but in a million years, like I said, I had never expected that I would become the story myself, and that the actual reporters that had covered my mom and met her, and she'd been to the studio, would come and poke a mic in my face and ask me that really stupid question, how do you feel, Danielle? Oh, fantastic. I just found out that my mother's been bludgeoned to death, and I'm really terrific. Great. The people who had known and met my mother could actually ask me a question like that was absolutely unbearable to me. So one of my messages to reporters is, please don't do that to crime victims. We're all devastated. We're all in shock. We don't know what the hell hit us. And to ask a question like that to someone that just lost their mother, who was not only their, mom, but their best friend, their closest confidant, we don't want to hear that. We want a question. We want questions about the case. What do you know? What do you
Danny, speaking
suspect?
Of the case, let's speak of the case because, people are going on Huffington Post or reading your article there. What inspired you to write the article and why on Huffington Post, and tell us the story? Let's go back, answer those questions, then we'll go back to almost 19 years ago. So why Huffington Post?
Okay, sure. Well, the Huffington Post, I'm actually a columnist there. I do. I was hired by Ariana herself. I'm a little bit of a moderate/conservative. I was actually brought in to bring a little of a different viewpoint to the publication. So I've been writing there, except I had a little bit of a time break. I had a neck operation. I had to take some time to recover. And then when I finally felt better, came back and decided that my first story should be about this situation because I believe that it was relatable. It was something that would draw people to me and make me a person that shows a different side. People see me as this successful journalist who covers other issues like politics, entertainment, social issues. I want to actually tell my personal story. And, the word Super Tuesday kept popping up all over the place, talking about the GOP candidates and the elections that were being held that day. And I was absolutely going crazy because Super Tuesday happened to be the 19-year anniversary of my mother's murder. She was actually, just to clarify something, she was killed on March 6, 1993. So it's not 1994, it's 1993, just to clarify that. So anyway, I said, wow, I have to do this. Super Tuesday wasn't a super day for me, so I decided to use that analogy and tell people why it wasn't a good day for me.
Now, Danny, we spoke earlier today. Is this a murder or is it an alleged governmental conspiracy?
You know,
and Danny, as you tell the story, for those who have it who don't know the story, can you just give a brief synopsis of what happened?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Basically, this was classified as a robbery from the get-go. There were two children who were riding bicycles that found my mother in the South Tucson desert on Saturday, March 6, 1993. They reported that there was a brown station wagon close to where the body was and a man acting strangely near the area. So they went to a local convenience store, a Quick Mart, I believe it was, and they called the police department and said, there's something, you know, we see this body and we see a man in a station wagon pretty close to it and he's acting drunk. And, you know, this was immediately, you know, called in and the police took a while to get there. It wasn't very quickly that they dropped everything and got over there. It took, you know, a good hour or so, I think it was. And then by the time that they had gotten there, the man in the station wagon had disappeared. So the children had been waiting there. I think they were about 12 years old at the time. The two kids, which then they brought a third around at that time, they were interviewed by the police, and they cordoned off the scene, and I was notified about this. This happened, you know, they found her at about 6 a.m. I was not notified about this, and my father was not. My father actually found out on the 10 o'clock news that this was my mother because she was missing that day, and he didn't know where she was, so he had reported her missing. And then on the 10 o'clock news, they found there was a body bag that was shown on the news, and he recognized the turquoise dress that she had that was slipping out of the body bag. And he called the police and said, oh, my God, I think that missing person is my wife. And they came up with photos of the crime scene, and it, in fact, was my mother. So my father found out on the 10 o'clock news that that was his wife. And then I was out that evening because I lived in Los Angeles at the time and the crime happened in Tucson, Arizona. So my dad called me. I was out. I came home 2 a.m. answering machine. I saw the light flashing and I had this feeling of dread. I don't know why, but I knew something was horribly wrong. I heard the sound of my father's voice. I called home right away. And I just remember when he was speaking that I just was screaming no. I fell to my knees, and I just couldn't stop screaming. Go on.
No, I was just going to say that you and I, covering crime, know that those first 72 hours are so crucial that unless you have significant leads or you have witness participation, that time, I don't care how many resources you have, or how much expertise, the time is so important. What happened in those 72 hours? Was your mother's case, do you believe the follow-up was done? Do you believe the case was handled in a proper way?
This case was botched, and it seems like now in retrospect, it seems like it was, I'm going to say it was allegedly purposefully botched. I mean, from point A to now, today.
What do you mean purposely? Explain what purposely.
When I found out about my mother's situation and what had happened, and I got off the phone with my father, the first flight to Tucson from Los Angeles was at 6 a.m. I jumped on the flight, had to go through Phoenix, then to Tucson. My dad picked me up from the airport. He was shaking and inconsolable, just absolutely out of his mind with grief. So I said, Daddy, I was in reporter mode, and I said, Daddy, take me to the police department right now. We arrived at the police department at around 9:30 to 10 a.m., which is on Sunday. Okay, so this was less than 24 hours or a little bit around the time of 24 hours when my mother's body had already been discovered. And I said, where is the detective covering the case? And the gentleman that I was speaking to said, she's not here. And I said, what do you mean she's not here? And he said, she's taking the day off today. It's a Sunday. I said, are you kidding me? I mean, I immediately started just putting on my reporter cap. And I said, excuse me, the first 24 to 72 hours are essential to solving a case. And I said, what are you doing? What are you doing sitting here? Why isn't there anyone at the crime scene? Why aren't they covering the area? What's going on here? And I demanded that someone go and do something, but nobody did. So my father and I took it into our own hands. We went to the crime scene, and we actually scoured the area ourselves, and we came across a quarter to a half a mile away from where my mom's body was found. There was a convenience store called Circle K, which is very popular out in the West Coast. They don't know so much about it. That would be the East Coast version of 7-Eleven. So I went, my father and I went to the Circle K, and we said, who was on, were you on duty last night, to the guy that was behind the counter? Now remember, this should have been the police, not my father and myself. The gentleman said, no, but I can contact him. We called the gentleman that was on duty, and that, you know, I recognized that there was a tape running, that there was a 24-hour tape that was going in a loop. And I said, oh, my God, can you stop the tape, please? Can you stop the tape? They said, not without a police intervention. We can't just do it because you're asking us. So the person at the convenience store said, yes, they had seen my mother at 1:30 a.m. at the convenience store buying cigarettes. And I called. We immediately called the Tucson Police Department. We went to, at that time, they were in cell phones. We ran to the, oh, actually, they let us call from the store. I'm sorry. It's a little bit after 19 years, a little hazy. They let us call the police from the store, and I said, we have a tape running right now that could be taping over my mother's, the people that killed my mother. I said, somebody send a patrol car here, and that patrol car never came.
But now let me ask you a question, Danny, because the Tucson Police Department did find DNA, did they not?
Yes, they did.
And what happened with the DNA? Did they give you any results as to any skin grafting or what was under your mother's nails? Because now, you know, DNA, it takes so long with the FBI. I know the FBI is not involved in your case yet, but I know from friends of mine who are on CSI Miami that, and that show, you know, works with real crime scene investigators, that there's always something, Danny, whether it's under the nails, a piece of hair, a fiber of clothes. What did they find?
You better believe that there was DNA. They have 7 out of 13 markers, which makes it ineligible for an FBI database. That were the standards as of 4 years ago. I'm not sure if those standards have changed. The last investigator that I spoke with had told me that technology will catch up to the case. But here's the thing that really bothers me. There's a few things. First of all, my mother's bag was found 1 month later in Kanab, Utah, which is a significant part of the story, because what happened was is that one mobile gasoline credit card had been used the day of her murder. So in other words, the people that had killed her, people, they do believe that there were two persons. They found a woman's DNA and a man's, 4 markers from a woman, 3 markers from a man underneath my mom's fingernails. She had fought for her life. She was in a scuffle with at least 2 people. Now, there may have been a 3rd person because somebody had to have gotten her from behind. So we don't, they're under the assumption that there could be 2 to 3 people involved. Now, what happened was that morning, her mobile gasoline credit card was used in Phoenix, Arizona, and then her bag was found in Utah. Now, they had a person of interest that was interviewed who had a brother that lived in Utah, and the gentleman in Tucson, Arizona, both of them were, I think, bipolar and schizophrenic. And the brother that lived in Tucson was brought in for DNA testing, but the brother that lived in Utah never was. And I always wondered why that was, because I had asked the police department, why are you, this is an interstate case, which first of all should make it FBI eligible, because if anything crosses the state lines, that is a federal case. So I don't understand why the FBI is not covering this case. That's first of all. And second of all, there is forensic evidence. They did find the bag. They found her purse. They found her wallet. They found her driver's license. There were significant, her passport was in her purse. They only stole money and jewelry off of my mother's body. And they left things that were deemed either cheap or not useful to them. Uh-huh. But there were also traveler's checks found in her purse. Now, if this was a robbery.
So things just don't add up. They just
it's
don't add up.
It's not adding up at all.
Now,
it's not
I just want to speak real quick because, yeah. You know, money is a mood changer. And, you know, some
right.
people, they do kill for money. But other people, you know, sometimes they open their mouth for money. So I just want you to all know tonight, there is a $100,000 reward to the capture and conviction of the murderers of Gail Renee Parker. So that's out there, everyone. If you feel like you know some information, I want you to call your local authorities. Let them know that you might know some information on the Gail Renee Parker story that happened in Tucson, Arizona in March of 1993. But now, Danny, I want you to let us know, because there's some weird stuff going on with Senator John McCain's office and holding information. Tell us about that.
Okay, so my private investigator reported the other day on my story. He made a comment, and he posted a comment that actually shocked me to no end, because it does open up a whole new can of worms. What happened was, he informed me that the area that my mother was found murdered in was only a few miles away from what was called Davis-Monson Air Force Base. And at the time, in 1993, there was some type of ballistic missile treaty that was going on between the U.S. and the Soviets, where there were satellite images being taken every day on a daily basis over Davis-Monson Air Force Base, which is in the south of Tucson, in the vicinity where my mother was murdered. So my private investigator asked Senator McCain's office to provide information, satellite images, anything that could possibly help to get the information from the Soviets, if they had it, if the Davis-Monson people would have it. And apparently, from what I heard, Senator McCain's office was not cooperative to my private investigator and was unwilling to give any information or any assistance to him. So
why do you think there is resistance, Danny? I mean, you know, I goodness knows there are many cold cases. Why did this one turn cold?
Well, Rolanda, if something is allegedly, it's made to look like a robbery and it isn't a robbery, or you know, there is involvement that perhaps my mom walked into a situation that was beyond something that the government wanted her to know. And this is all allegedly. I'm not accusing anyone of anything here. But this does bring up a whole new scenario, because the police investigation was so shoddy that it's almost surprisingly hard to believe that they would botch it this badly on purpose. I mean, it never made sense to me from the beginning the way that this case was treated. And also the fact that, Ro, when we did the show, you know, my detective refused to comment on the case. Nancy Grace did a piece on my mom. They refused to comment to Nancy Grace, to John Walsh, to other people that have done inquiries. Why? Why won't the Tucson Police Department cooperate with anyone who comes to them? This does not make sense. If they want to solve this case, why would they keep their mouths shut about things that could possibly help the case? I don't understand that. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
You have also spoken very boldly, and you have written also in this recent Huffington Post blog, where you talk about how difficult it's been to get not only justice from the law enforcement field, but what you feel is a lack of justice, even within your own peers in the media. And you write that, I mean, this line really got to me, Danny, when you said, middle age are ignored, put on a shelf, discarded like a piece of bread. You say because your mom wasn't famous or super rich, that created an issue about the types of coverage that this crime got.
Yes, this really bothers me. I've noticed that if you have an adorable white little child or a teenager or something that fits the mold, Carrie Anthony is a perfect example. That was something that just captured the heart, mind, souls of everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the O.J. Simpson case.
Well, so I've got to tell you something,
high-profile situation. Yeah, I'm sorry?
Danny, your story has captured my heart. It's captured my place. I lost my father when I was 8 years old. And, you know, I don't remember him dying, or I remember being at the funeral. That's all I remember at 8 years old. But I know when you lose a parent, the number one thing you want to know is that they're at peace.
Absolutely.
We're going to invite Mark Anthony. He's been on the show before. He has a book called Never Letting Go, and it's one of the most remarkable books. He's a medium. He's a psychic. Maybe we can get some information from him tonight. But everyone, there's a wonderful quote, Danny, that I love, and it's called, "Every time you say my name, my spirit shall live." So Gail, Renee, Parker, let your spirit live. Danny, Rose, stay here. We're going to invite Mark Anthony on right now. And everyone, please, I hope this story inspires you to just open your eyes. If not on this case, open your mouth about other cases that you know. Have the balls to say something, people. Because you know what? Your mouth, your eyes, they can make a difference. Mark Anthony, welcome to Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you, Max. It's an honor to be back. And Danny, I'm so sorry what you've been through. I'm not only am I a psychic medium, but I'm also a criminal defense lawyer. So I share your frustration with the system, and it appears that you've had frustration with the system on every possible level. And it's really sad when you see incompetence all the way from local police all the way up to the federal level.
Yes, thank you so much for saying that, Mark. I really appreciate it.
You know, there's a lot that I could get into right now, and what I would like to do is I would like to do a reading for you, an in-depth reading, if you're open to that. I don't really think we've got the proper amount of time, and I don't know if this is really the proper venue to get as in-depth as I would like to get. So I'm going to make that offer to you. But what I would like to say is what I feel about your mother, and it's interesting because the type of mediumship that I practice is known as evidential mediumship. So when I connect with spirits, I have to bring forth evidence. Unfortunately, I've heard a lot about the case tonight that I didn't know, because prior to coming on the show, all I knew is that your mother had been murdered and that it was a cold case. So if we do a one-on-one reading, I would hope to bring forth things that only you or people close to your mother would know. But what I do get about your mother is that she was a woman of great compassion and great understanding, and she was worldly and street smart, but one of her virtues, I would say, is that she had a very big heart. It was very compassionate towards people. Does this make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the things
hold
I
on,
said
hold
on the
run. Hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Hold on, Danny.
Okay.
All right. Hold on.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. And so when we do readings, what it is, let me say something. Confirm what I'm saying, or tell me that no, it doesn't make sense, as opposed to
sure.
launching into lengthy explanations. And I'm not chastising you, but when you work with a medium, you have to do that, because otherwise, you know, the skeptics and critics are saying all I'm doing is picking things out of what you've told me. Okay?
Sure.
Now, it's very interesting that you said there were three people potentially involved. I do believe that there were three people involved. And I believe that they were of mixed ethnicity. In other words, I think two of them were white and another person was of either like a darker skinned ethnic background, is just the feeling that I get. And I feel that this was not as if they ambushed your mother, but the sensation and the impression that I get is that she was kind of lured into a situation because of her compassion. In other words, oh, hey, lady, can you help us? And she, being the charitable and understanding person, came forward, and then her street smarts kicked in, and she realized that it was a trap. That's a big part of the sensation that I get. Okay, and I don't know if there's any evidence that you're aware of to substantiate that, but your mother was really quick to discern that. Now, when it comes to things like the traveler's checks not being touched, what these people did, they were fairly unsophisticated, and they took the things that they understood and that would be easy for them to manipulate and handle. Anything that was more of a hassle or required a greater effort, they didn't want to get into. And I've really got a very, very sick feeling coming through me that this is a pattern of behavior, at least for one of these people, almost as if enough of the evidence could be put together, we're going to find other victims like your mother throughout the Southwest. So what I'm getting at, I'm not saying this is a serial killer, but I really am getting that feeling.
That makes sense to me.
And that's why this story affects all of us, because somebody, unless they're caught, is still out there.
Now
that's right.
I'm being medium and criminal defense lawyer here. All right, you both said, all three of you said something very important to this. Middle-aged victims don't matter. We go for the pretty young blonde girls. I mean, when I say we, I mean the media,
yes.
Haley, Anthony's. And yes, absolutely, those are horrific crimes. But think about when Wayne Williams was preying upon young black children in Atlanta. Uh-huh. It
mm-hmm.
didn't quite make the sensation that Ted Bundy did preying upon pretty sorority sisters in Florida. Just as heinous a crime. Well,
absolutely.
A serial killer also is aware of this.
That's
and this
right,
particular
Mark, that's
person
right.
is targeting people that will be under the radar screen media-wise
mm-hmm.
and is manipulating people of lesser intelligence and ability to be his accomplices.
And let
me
just say...
male, hold on, let me finish.
Yeah.
There's an alpha male who is the ringleader of this, and he's got his one or two henchmen or women that he can manipulate, and that's what I'm feeling is behind this. All right, now go ahead, say what you're going to say.
No, I was saying I was so happy that you brought up that point because this is part of the general cry. We have shows on television that deal with the missing, but what Danny pointed out, what you just pointed out, Mark, is so true that there are segments that feel that they're left out. And in fact, TV One, Kathy Hughes, I applaud her, is about to come out with a missing children for children of color who are missing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what it brings to fore is that this kind of thing could happen to any of us. And it just makes you wonder about the response and how mm-hmm. a family has to deal with this and
absolutely.
What the realities are when our law enforcement systems are overtaxed anyway. So
it does. And that's why a lot of serial killers prey upon prostitutes, because number one, usually, please forgive me for generalizing, women or men that come from that are prostitutes generally don't come from the Republican family living in the nice side of town. Okay.
Mm.
All right. So the families have no clout. Secondly, a lot of people have this feeling that, oh, well, the prostitute deserved mm. it. Okay.
Right.
So that, and
mm-hmm.
what it is, it's easy for the serial killer to target these type of people. Now,
absolutely.
This particular killer has a whole different agenda, and the acquisition of money and credit cards and things like that is incidental to the actual objective of this person. This is, in many ways, a highly sophisticated killer who manipulates henchmen to kind of do the dirty work. But he doesn't always need them and oftentimes acts alone. This is the feeling that I'm getting from this. And it's interesting
wow.
when you start talking about a brown station wagon, once again,
mm-hmm.
Serial killers oftentimes have vans, station wagons, things where they can transport their victims around in.
Yes.
Now, let me ask a question. Was there, I know you said bludgeoned to death, and please forgive me for bringing this up. Were there significant impacts to her chest?
No, there weren't.
Interesting, because I get this feeling, this incredible pressure in her chest. So I'm
that may have been her. Oh, should I elaborate or should I?
Yeah,
you
yes.
said I stay concise.
No, go ahead.
I think there seemed to have been a struggle for her purse. And I think that she was probably pulling it towards her, maybe just, you know, not realizing what was going on. And maybe that's the, you know, the pressing against. I don't know. I'm just making an assumption.
It could also be, you know, when you're incredibly terrified, you get that fluttery feeling in your chest, too, because I just get this pressure feeling in your chest as well.
Yeah. I'm sure she was terrified.
Yeah, I mean,
that's something that haunts me, you know, knowing that my mom, you know, would be in a situation like that, and that these bastards that may have done this are roaming the streets these days. This is one of the reasons I brought this up. It isn't just for myself. This is to also help other people. I don't want this happening to any other family, and if I could prevent something from happening to another family, I really would like to do that.
Well, they say that the more a case, you know, the more cold cases that we have, you know, the more murders are happening because, you know, the person does become a serial killer, possibly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
now, we're running out of time, but Mark, I just want you to give a little bit more to Danny. I'm going to give you two each other's numbers after the show. Rolanda, I want to thank you for being here tonight, and thank you, Rolanda, so much for bringing us the attention.
Listen, I thank you so much. I thank you so much for picking up a post and making a major story of it that may change. If you know something, y'all, please call. Sometimes we hear these stories and we think we're so helpless as a community, but communities are stronger than we give ourselves credit for. Somebody knows something over these 20
Absolutely.
Years. So on some case. So do the right thing. Do the right thing and make that phone call, please. Danny, I love you. Thank you so much. Mark, nice to meet you. And Max, keep on keeping on doing good work like this.
Hey,
thank
Rose,
you.
Stay with us. Stay with us real quick. But everyone,
okay.
I want you to all remember, because we're going to give the last few moments to Danny and Mark, but I want you all to remember, Gail Parker was a 51-year-old mother, daughter, wife, sister, and aunt. So I want you to all, before you go to bed tonight, remember your mothers, your daughters, your wives, your sisters, and your aunts. And know that this can happen in this world to anybody we know. And I just pray right now that you guys, if you know anything about any murder, not just this one, but open up your mouth, be bold, have courage, and know that you can change someone's life by picking up the phone and calling your local authorities. Gail Renee Parker, let your spirit live on. Mark, I give you to Danny. And then after the show, I'm going to connect you all together, all right? So, Mark, I turn you over. Everyone, take life to the max. Enjoy the show. Mark, talk to Danny. Danny, love you for being here. Mark, thank you as always.
Thank you
Mark's
so
book,
much.
Everyone, Never
thank
Letting Go. You can get it on Amazon. Mark, do you want to say something real quick to Danny?
Danny, one of the things that I write about in my book, Never Letting Go, which is about healing from grief and loss, and as a criminal offense lawyer, I do talk about victims of crime in that book, as well, is that, and this is to all the news media and to everyone listening, I write about how everyone counts, everyone matters. And it doesn't matter if this crime happened almost 20 years ago. It doesn't matter what the victim was, middle-aged, young, homeless, wealthy, African-American, whatever. Everyone counts, everyone matters, and everyone deserves justice. And I applaud you and I praise you for not giving up. And it's interesting that my book says Never Letting Go is the name of the title. And in a way, that's what you're doing. You're never letting go. But just make sure that your intentions are motivated by love for your mother, because you are never letting go of the love for your mother, as opposed to a primeval sense of vengeance. Because when you're coming from a higher purpose, you will have more resources opened to you on both the material world and in the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for saying that, because my mother was a precious person and she deserves to
Absolutely.
Receive the justice that has eluded her and my family for so long. And I
All
remember,
right.
I told her on
We're never letting go.
Looking.
But the one thing
never
we got to let go,
go
of right now is time. Danny, thank you for being here. Mark Anthony, Never
You're
Letting
so
Go.
Awesome.
Love the book. We're going to have you back, Mark Anthony, the 25th. Rolanda Watts, I love you. Everyone, I love you for listening. Take life to the max. Hey, Senator John McCain, open up the files. Take life to the max. Until next time, love you all for listening.